Welcome to the American Federation of Government Employees Inside Government Program, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. Now here's your host, Jason Fornicola.
This week we'll discuss healthcare reform oral arguments before the Supreme Court with Center for American Progress Action Fund President and CEO Tom Perriello, former Clinton White House Senior Staffer Bob Wiener, Families USA Health Policy Deputy Director Mark Steinberg, and Healthcare for America Now Executive Director Ethan Rome. But first, Congressman Jerry Connolly weighs in on the issue. Congressman, welcome back to the program.
Great to be with you.
So here we are today. The Supreme Court is taking a close look at the Affordable Care Act and the constitutionality of that law. What are your thoughts about this whole process?
I guess my first thought is that the Supreme Court needs to be very, very careful here. They have a tiger by the tail, and it's a tiger they decided to grab. The last time we've had a court make this kind of a momentous decision, potentially, frankly, was during the New Deal, where the Supreme Court made some catastrophic, wrongheaded, and deeply unpopular decisions about the constitutionality of the New Deal program, and it did real damage to the court. And led to Franklin Roosevelt actually wanting to restructure the court. Now, that didn't happen, but I will tell you that opinions on the Supreme Court changed subsequently. I think this court really needs to take great care. It already has a reputation in many circles for being partisan-driven. Bush v. Gore, Lilly Ledbetter, Citizen United, and now health care. This is a duly constituted law. And for a lot of folks who affiliate with the Tea Party who hold up the Constitution saying, I believe in the Constitution, the Supreme Court needs to tread lightly because there is no provision in the Constitution for the Supreme Court to review and nullify a duly passed law by the Congress of the United States and signed into law by the President. It is something they've arrogated to themselves since John Marshall, but it ought to be a power that is used very sparingly and only under extraordinary circumstances. There is nothing to suggest this law in any way violates the Constitution of the United States. The powers enumerated in the Constitution were adhered to in the passage of this law, and I believe there are no substantive grounds for finding the law anything other than constitutional exercise by the Congress of the President.
Congressman, what's at stake in this issue?
20% of the economy, continued health care coverage in America, the fact that without reforms, the current system is going to collapse of its own weight. The reason we adopted reforms were because of arbitrary and capricious decisions by insurers, the fact that 30 million Americans were uninsured and putting a burden to the tune of $116 billion of additional cost on the system every year that every one of us who is insured has to subsidize. That is a tax by any other name. And the fact that there were huge pockets of problems in the existing healthcare system we tried to modify. And I believe that it's working. I believe the individual reforms contained in healthcare are very popular. The idea of the individual mandate is controversial, but without that mandate, which everybody in the past acknowledged, Mitt Romney, Newt Gingrich, the insurance companies themselves, without that mandate, we can't have the reforms. Otherwise, we're shifting more cost burden to the existing insurance pool, and that's not sustainable.
How important is it for all Americans to have at least some access to affordable health care coverage?
Absolutely essential. Our competitors in the industrialized worlds have all got insurance programs in place that have universal coverage. It is truly unacceptable, it seems to me, as Americans, that 30 million of our fellow Americans, and sometimes that number goes up to 50, depending on the economy, don't have access to insurance. I can tell you when we were debating health care reform, I heard horror story after horror story in my district about the inability of small businesses to continue to provide insurance because of spiraling health care costs, the arbitrary denial of health care coverage by insurance companies because someone developed a medical condition or had some history in the past, things like asthma, things like diabetes, a child with autism. These were all defined as pre-existing conditions, and that meant that their coverage was jeopardized, in some cases denied. And that's catastrophic. In my district, the single largest contributing factor to family bankruptcy is health care costs. And I represent the wealthiest district in America.
Congressman, we've seen in the press this issue covered time and time again. A lot of attention has been paid to it. But talk to the audience a little bit about the work that went into getting this bill to become a law.
I don't think any issue has received more attention over the last half century than health care. It was debated. There were town hall meetings. There were hearings. There were floor debates. It had, you know, it had the perils of Pauline in terms of its fortunes legislatively. We had 60 votes, then we didn't have 60 votes. We're going to do it through reconciliation. We had a Senate bill and a House bill, and they weren't compatible. And but at the end of the day, there was a consensus in the Congress. We had to do something, and this was a comprehensive, meaningful reform. Is it perfect? No bill is perfect. We've modified Social Security many times since its original passage. We've modified Medicare many times since its passage. We will do the same with this. But it creates a positive framework for moving forward that will, over time, change the cost trajectory and bring down costs. We already have some empirical evidence of that. We were accused at the time of the passage of health care reform of killing Medicare Advantage. What's happened since we passed it? For the first time in the history of Medicare Advantage, premium costs went down 2 years in a row, benefits went up, and millions more enrolled in the program. Other than that, yes, we killed Medicare Advantage. But that's empirical evidence that what we promised with health care reform really can take place, can happen, if we allow it to be implemented and we give it some time.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with Congressman Jerry Connolly from Virginia. Congressman, what are your constituents saying in the 11th District in Virginia?
Well, candidly, I think that the jury is out. When we passed health care insurance reform, my district was split, like much of the country, right down the middle. Our polling showed 45% thought it was a good thing, and 44% thought it was not. And I would often be at town hall meetings where one constituent would say, I don't like that health care reform, and I don't think we need it. And right next to him would be a mother with a child with a pre-existing condition saying, thank God you're going to support health care reform. I need it. Without this, my child is at risk. And it was interesting to me how the two weren't speaking to each other. So it's not an easy decision politically, but from my point of view, I didn't get elected to always make just easy decisions. What is best for the country? What is best for our constituency long term? How are we going to protect Medicare? How are we going to make sure that we include everybody and bring down the cost growth of healthcare over time to a more reasonable and management level? How can we improve the quality of healthcare? Because we know there's a lot of inefficiency in the current system. So trying to change that with this new framework is also part of the long-term goal. And I'm confident that with time it's going to accomplish that. And I believe over time my constituents are going to see the benefits for this approach.
When you talk to constituents who don't support it, someone maybe comes into your office and says, Congressman, I just don't like it. I can't support it. What do you say to them? How do you educate them about what the law has to offer?
Well, first of all, I want to hear their concerns. Sometimes there's a lot of misinformation. You know, it's going to help illegal aliens. No, it won't. This is an explicit provision that says no. It's nationalized health care. Well, actually, no. It's entirely predicated on building on the existing private insurance. There's not even a public option in the health care reform bill. It got taken out. So it's not nationalization of health care at all. That was rejected. And so when we go through, you know, some of the myths, you know, there are no death panels, there is no euthanasia, no abortion is not going to be funded in this bill. You know, the law of the land is the Hyde Amendment that says you can't. We reaffirm that. The president issued an executive order reaffirming it. If they will accept that those are the facts, then we go through some of the reforms. And, of course, what often happens is people like those reforms, but they're uncomfortable about the individual mandate. And, you know, the economics of the health care reform are that without an individual mandate, the reforms collapse.
Where do we go after the court makes its decision?
It depends on the court's decision. I'm hoping constitutional jurisprudence will actually prevail. Stare decisis, that is to say respect for precedent, will also prevail. Chief Justice Roberts said that that was just sort of the keystone of his whole approach to jurisprudence. Well, let's see it. There is absolutely no constitutional reason for deciding anything other than this is a constitutional exercise of Congress's right to pass laws in America. And again, not all laws are popular, but if this is a legal decision, not a political decision. Sadly, however, a lot of us don't have a lot of confidence in the Supreme Court making the right legal decision because they have all too often, frankly, fallen back on their own partisan proclivity to the great detriment of this country. Citizen United is a great example. It has upended our politics and will continue to do so for generations to come in a way that is very unwelcome. most Americans are very uncomfortable with the fact that a billionaire sitting in Las Vegas can completely decide to upend a primary fight or an election because he has a particular issue. And he can pour $25 million if he wants. The average citizen can't do that. And in many cases, of course, those donors are anonymous. So we don't even know who's trying to influence our local politics and tell us who our local elected officials ought to be. That's wrong. It's un-American. And the Supreme Court, by a 5-4 party line vote, made that cataclysmic decision for us. So I'm hopeful that they'll not yield to that partisan temptation. But given recent history, I'm not overly confident they will.
Congressman Jerry Connolly from Virginia, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll continue our health care reform discussion with Center for American Progress Action Fund President and CEO Tom Perriello.
Attention AFGE members, are you in need of a new computer or home appliance but can't spare the upfront cash? Discover Purchasing Power, an exclusive benefit available to AFGE members where you can buy brand name laptops, tablets, and home appliances through 12 months of easy payroll deduction. No upfront cash or credit check required. Shop now and get an 8% AFGE member only discount with promo code AFGE member. That's all one word. Learn more, visit shoppurchasingpower.com today.
Did you know MetLife Auto and Home has valuable deals on insurance for AFGE members that could save them hundreds every year? Benefits include special discounts just for being an AFGE member, and in most states, a deductible credit for claim-free driving up to $250. Call the AFGE Benefits line at 1-888-844-2343 today to see how much you could save. That's 1-888-844-2343. Underwritten by Metropolitan Group Property and Casualty Insurance Company, Warwick, Rhode Island.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined now by Tom Perriello, the president and CEO of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Tom is also the former congressman from the 5th District in Virginia. Congressman, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me. It's an exciting day.
Today is an exciting day, and we sit just steps away from the United States Supreme Court, where the justices will begin hearing arguments related to the Affordable Care Act and its constitutionality. Where do you fit into this discussion?
Well, I think it's clearly within the bounds of the Constitution. In fact, most of the arguments that the conservatives are making are really more relevant to the Articles of Confederation that were rejected by the framers than the Constitution. The Articles, as you know, didn't have an interstate commerce clause, and George Washington noted that it was so weak that it almost cost them the Revolutionary War. So when we get back to the intent of the framers, we have a pretty clear example. They had one founding document. They rejected it because it was too weak. They founded the Constitution, and that Constitution, as well as over 200 years of precedent, clearly say that this is within the bounds of interstate commerce. There's plenty of political and policy debate to be had, but as a constitutional argument, I think it's pretty much a slam dunk.
In addition to that, this has been a, as you mentioned, very hotly contested issue. There's a lot of opinions on both sides of this, but what does it mean for the American people?
Well, I think what people are seeing now with the contraception debate is they're finally starting to realize that there was a lot in this that they liked. People liked the idea of being able to start a family without having to get their boss's permission. They liked the idea of pre- and postnatal care so that starting a family doesn't mean getting socked with $7,000 or $8,000 of related costs outside your insurance, that insurance companies have to spend 80% of their money on actual care of patients. Over 85 million Americans have gotten some form of free preventative care, and we're a healthier country, a more efficient and more competitive country when that happens, as well as 2.5 million young Americans who are now able to stay on their parents' insurance. So I think that's the reality for families at the kitchen table, and it's one that's making it a little easier in these tough times.
Congressman, can you talk a little bit about what is going to be happening over at the Supreme Court, the steps that are going to be undertaken, the process that we can expect?
Well, you know, we certainly see a lot of activists out on both sides, though nothing compared to what we saw in the summer of 09. I had the fortune to be in the middle of that vibrant democratic process. So I think everything's been toned down. Most families out that I meet with across America are asking, what does this mean for me at the kitchen table? And when they know that the billions of dollars that go to cover the uninsured are being dumped on middle-class families, over $1,000 more in premiums for the families that are working. working hard and playing by the rules. That's not fair to people. There's a basic fairness to saying everyone needs to step up and take some responsibility here. So there's the most ideological folks are going to be on the steps. Hopefully, the people inside in the robes are going to really put the Constitution first and not their political affiliations first. And if they do, I think we'll see the country recognize this as constitutional, and then we can get back to the debate about how do we make this even stronger.
What does a more expansive health care coverage system mean for middle-class Americans?
Well, first and foremost, middle-class Americans right now are paying about $1,000 extra a year to cover the cost of the uninsured. I come from a family of pediatricians, and what they can tell you is it's a lot cheaper to have a prenatal visit than to cover the NICU bill when a baby is born prematurely, in some cases where that could have been prevented. Obesity and other issues are massive, and the problem is the incentives have changed. It used to be you were at one job for 40 years. That meant you had one health insurer for 40 years, which means the best way for them to make money was to keep you healthy. Then when that changed and people won pink slip, meant you changed insurance or had no insurance. Then what the health insurance companies wanted was to make sure you found out you were sick when you were on someone else's insurance. And that's not a system that works very well and is very fair. So what we're trying to do by getting back to a competitive market where the insurers can't dump you is to make them make money by keeping you healthy, not by making sure you get sick when you're on someone else's insurance.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with Tom Perriello, the former congressman from Virginia's 5th District and now the president and CEO of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Congressman, what shaped your views on this issue?
Well, it's certainly heavily affected by growing up in the family of a pediatrician and knowing that while we do have the best specialty care in the world, we've actually been choking out primary care, pediatrics, general practice docs, because our system of insurance comes in. And my dad kept saying, hey, it used to be me and the patient. Now it's me and the insurance company, and really the insurance company making that decision, and understanding that that was a broken system. Also representing a rural area, and it's true that by polling, the rural areas are less supportive, but in reality, they're some of the biggest beneficiaries, because rural hospitals tend to have a higher percentage of uninsured, which means higher deadweight loss on the hospitals in those areas. So you saw those closing down, and that was not okay, primarily as a health issue, but also as some of the biggest employers in the country. So I went out and talked to doctors, I talked to hospital owners, talked to nurses, and obviously talked to families who had dealt with that reality that in our economy, it's bad enough to know that any day you might be losing your job, but when losing your job also means losing your health insurance, that's a bridge too far. But under this system, no matter what happens with your employment, there's always going to be a place you can go to buy competitive, affordable health care.
When you're out talking to Americans about this issue, about the Affordable Care Act, point by point, benefit by benefit, what response do you get from both supporters and opponents?
Almost every poll shows that when you talk about the substance of the bill, Americans overwhelmingly support it. When you talk about the bill as a package or call it Obamacare, those numbers drop below 50. The fact is this didn't come out of nowhere. These were smart people who cared about America, cared about American families, going out and asking, what do you need? People said, we want to get rid of the discrimination against pre-existing conditions. That's done. Under the old system, being a woman was considered a pre-existing condition, with female premiums being as much as 50% higher than for men. Over and over we heard that's wrong. People said, hey, you know, my kid who's just gotten out of college is going into a bad job market. We need him to be able or her to be able to have 3 or 4 years on our health insurance while he or she is taking that internship, trying to get that second degree to enter the job market. The other big thing that we heard was that Medicare was on track to become start becoming insolvent in 2017. That's now 5 years away. Under the Republican plan, the Ryan budget and others they voted on, Medicare starts becoming insolvent in 5 years, not 50, not a generation, 5 years. What did we do? We went after hundreds of billions of dollars of savings in the program, put every penny, every single penny into keeping Medicare solvent so that people would have that promise we made to our seniors. That's been stretched out at least a decade, and they want to undo that and put seniors in a risk that they could be seeing just within the next few years this starting to go bankrupt, and that was not acceptable on our watch.
Do you think that we've come almost to a crossroads in our country right now with this issue?
You know, I think we've come to a point, we've come to several points over the years on Medicare and Social Security, and every time the Democrats and the progressives have stood up and said, we're going to make sure this guarantee doesn't go away. Republicans have tried to fearmonger it and say, oh, it's not going to be there, it's not going to be there. Well, it's continued to be there for a reason, which is progressives have gone up and said, there will be no choice. We've made this promise to our seniors like we've made to our veterans, and we're going to see it through. In terms of the rest of healthcare, I think we're at a crossroads back, which is from people sort of tuning it out to coming back to it and saying, okay, there was a lot of shouting last time. Now let's get to the facts. And as you noted, every time we get to the facts about the bill, people like it. People like the fact that it's going to help working and middle-class families. It's going to help women. It's going to help young people. It's going to help seniors.
As we look forward, not just to the rest of 2012, but beyond, what are your top priorities going to be on this issue?
Well, you know, for us, we just believe in an economy that works for all Americans and not just the few, and a democracy that represents all Americans and not just the few. And right now, we see a concentration of economic power that's translating into a concentration of political power. And if you see who was funding all the opposition to the health care bill, it was the health insurance companies. It was Wall Street people coming in on the issue of the financial collapse. And we think that this democracy is about the demos. It's about all the people. So we really think that we need to get back to an economy in terms of tax fairness, in terms of competitiveness, in terms of making education affordable, that this has got to get back to a basic middle-class agenda, and I think we're starting to do that. We've seen that from the president with the Kansas speech and other things. That's getting back to that basic promise. You know, my father grew up quite poor, child of immigrants, was able to go to college and live the American dream, and we think that American dream shouldn't have a past tense on it. It should be very much a present tense issue.
Tom Perriello, the president and CEO of the Center for American Progress Action Fund, as well as the former congressman from Virginia's 5th District. Congressman, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll be joined by former Clinton White House senior staffer Bob Wiener.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership, you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens, Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Attention AFGE members, are you in need of a new computer or home appliance but can't spare the upfront cash? Discover Purchasing Power, an exclusive benefit available to AFGE members where you can buy brand name laptops, tablets, and home appliances through 12 months of easy payroll deduction. No upfront cash or credit check required. Shop now and get an 8% AFGE member only discount with promo code AFGE member. That's all one word. Learn more, visit shoppurchasingpower.com today.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Bob Wiener. Bob is the former chief of staff of the House Aging Committee and Health Subcommittee, as well as a Clinton White House former senior staffer. Bob, welcome back to the program.
Jason, it's a pleasure to be with you, and thanks for bringing out the truth and the facts and the working people's view, which is what you do so amazingly well, and no one else does it better.
Let's talk a little bit about some of that truth and fact. We're here today. Yeah. The Supreme Court is starting its close look at the health care law. What are your initial impressions?
Well, I think, unfortunately, you're not going to get a bunch of protests and persuasion to ever get somebody like Clarence Thomas to vote for this bill. His wife is an ambassador to the Tea Party movement, and they took money from the other side and violated the judicial ethics, which the Supreme Court says they don't have to pay any attention to. So most of the conservative bloc has, in fact, spoken. My take, Jason, is different from many other people in the liberal ranks. Mine is not, here's why we should go for the bill. Of course the court should vote for the bill on the merits. My take is that the worldview politics of this court and their appointees is what's going to dominate how they bring in their votes. And I've moderated a forum, you remember, at the National Press Club, with two, where I had to be disgustingly objective and bipartisan. and we brought in Ken Cuccinelli, the Attorney General of Virginia, and Martha Coakley, the Attorney General of Massachusetts. And Ken Cuccinelli, the Attorney General of Virginia, conceded that the world political view of the appointees that created this, their membership in the Supreme Court, will play a role in the way that they consider the case. My hope, however, is that this is not a case where rich guys in robes with federal health insurance themselves have no clue about poor and average people who need, and many wouldn't have, adequate health insurance without this bill that it took generations for Congress to pass.
So what are you expecting then as the week goes on and then ultimately a decision is made sometime in June?
I think the best case scenario that we're going to get is that they will, not because of the merits, because you can talk about the merits of the mandate with Social Security and the Civil Rights Act and Medicare and all of the precedents and the wheat bill from whatever year that was that they said that the wheat farmer, you have all the precedents for the mandate. But this court, if you look at Citizens United and Bush v. Gore, just votes 5-4 on the basis of their political views. So I think the best case scenario that we're going to get is that the mandate get overthrown, but they at least allow what Congress has been able to do since time immemorial, which is specific provisions of providing benefits for people. Because if they take away, it's hard to imagine the court blocking Congress's provision of benefits already underway, their children's care through age 26, cheaper and free drugs for 45 million seniors, pre-existing conditions covered, no lifetime caps, no being thrown off if sick, free prevention, including mammograms for women and colonoscopies for men and women, and overseeing insurance companies who've doubled their rates every 10 years and assuring that 85% of the benefits go to people's benefits. Those provisions, if the court takes those benefits away, it's absolutely inexcusable, unprecedented, and I don't think that the American people will stand for it.
So what do you think then the American people would do if those provisions were taken away?
I think that will be a case if we argue our message well. And unfortunately, Democrats have not done it very well. Clooney said that the Republicans have a great message machine with all the millions, hundreds of millions of dollars of propaganda, and Democrats don't. But if we argue our message well, we can not only take to the streets and mobilize, but it's really going to help Obama win re-election by if they make the point that the provisions of this bill, which are hugely supported in the polls, unlike the buzzwords of is it big government, but the provisions of the bill, if we make our message well, we can win the election on that basis.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with Bob Wiener, a former Clinton White House senior staffer. Bob, you, more than anyone, understand the political implications of issues like these. What do you think is coming down the road in that regard?
Well, it strikes me that before every time there's a health care bill, whether it was Hillary's bill or Clinton's bill or now Obama's bill, there is always a 15% public opinion majority of support for the bill. Then the insurance companies roll in and they put Harry and Louise on, which they did with Hillary Care under Bill Clinton, and they've done a similar propaganda, big government intrusion mandate for this bill. And suddenly they change the opinion on the bill because they don't consider the specific provisions. So I think we have got to make sure that people understand, and if there's an education process and we really do our job and we tell people about the provisions of the bill, that can be won. I remember, Jason, I was on Fox, and Fox tried to cut me off from ticking off the provisions of the bill. The children through 26, the cheaper drugs for seniors, the pre-existing conditions, no lifetime caps, no being thrown off if sick, the free mammograms and colonoscopies. I was ticking off the provisions, and they said, we don't want to talk about that. It's a job killer. It's not a job killer, by the way. This bill saves money and creates jobs in the healthcare field. But they wanted to say that, and they wanted to defuse. So John Stewart picked up on it, made a joke of it, and put me on his show with what part Wiener, what part of we don't want our viewers to know what's in the bill don't you understand? And I remember being on an airplane before I went on Fox telling the steward on the, you know, the flight attendant on the plane, here are the provisions of the bill. And he said, gee, if we knew that, I'd be for the bill. But the Republicans try to block that. Try to get the provisions of the bill ticked off anytime you're talking to Republicans. And, oh, it's big government, it's intrusion, and it's telling us what to do with our lives. You know, we don't have government in health care. You know, I just got my letter from Medicare because I'm about to turn 65, and it says, you will pay for your Medicare, and we're taking the money from your Social Security. That's what the letter says. And I have to go through contortions to say, no, I want to keep my health care insurance if I want to keep it the way it is without Part B of Medicare. You have to go through all hell and back to not do it. Or the mandate of what the Republicans are doing now, the forced transvaginal ultrasound in Rick Perry's Texas and Bob McDonald's Virginia, and then the Doonesbury final column that says the final indignity, here's the bill. What's that? Not a mandate? You're forced to pay for something you don't even want? So the Republicans cause a mandate. They call it a mandate if it's something that Obama wants that's good for the American people. But if it's something they want, it's not a mandate.
Bob, what are the implications here of the election in 2012?
Well, they're huge, but we could blow it if we don't do it right. If we allow the Republicans to keep characterizing as a caricature this bill as big government at its worst, we're going to lose on that. We'll lose as has happened in past elections when there's been health care with Hillary care. You lose 5 points in the election that way. But if we tick off children's care through 26, cheaper drugs for seniors, pre-existing conditions, no lifetime caps, no being thrown off if sick, free mammograms and colonoscopies, and 85% of the benefits that insurance companies of the premiums go to people instead of 30% being taken for insurance company oversight, if we make those tick off those provisions, we can win. But we have to do it. It has to be a message machine from the Democratic Party. And I've been making that point. I made it to Pelosi before the last election. I make it on the White House calls that I'm on. I keep pushing that we have got to make that message, and we have to do it strongly, succinctly, and forcefully in what the American people now understand, which is sound bites. And if we allow the Republicans to take that from us and call it big government, we lose the message. If we talk about what's in the bill and the precedent for the bill, we win big time, because by 15% in a majority, the American people support what's in the bill.
When you're pushing to make sure that people understand these provisions, what kind of response are you getting?
Always people say, yeah, if we know what's in the bill, that's a great bill. That's all, unless there's always a third of the conservatives, as John Conyers said to me, are hopeless and they're just going to vote against their own interests regardless. But most people are enlightened and want to be educated and informed. And you remember, we used to get 60 to 90 votes on Medicare, on Social Security, on the Civil Rights Act from the minority. It's only now, since Newt Gingrich, that it's so volatile and partisan that Republicans oppose it all the way. There are still moderate Republicans out there. And, of course, Democrats understand that this is a good thing for people. It's a hard-fought bill that we have tried for generations to enact, and now we at least have something that's positive.
Bob Wiener, former Clinton White House senior staffer, as well as the chief of staff of the House Aging Committee and Health Subcommittee. Bob, we appreciate your time and your insight, as always.
Thanks, Jason.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll hear from Families USA Health Policy Deputy Director Mark Steinberg and Healthcare for America Now Executive Director Ethan Rome.
Attention AFGE members. Did you know about AFGE's new service to assist you with legal rights issues? It's called the AFGE Legal Rights Attorney Program, which offers free attorney representation in cases brought by AFGE councils and locals on behalf of AFGE members. The program, administered by AFGE's General Counsel's Office, has handled more than 150 cases since 2005 and has won millions of dollars in back pay for our members. The Legal Rights Attorney Program is designed to take cases that will be brought to arbitration, the Merit System Protection Board, or other review boards where both back pay and attorney's fees are available. These cases include removal, suspension, reduction in pay, reduction in grade, and furlough. For information about the program, please email legalrights@afge.org. Not a member? Become one and take advantage of this incredible resource today.
Did you know MetLife Auto and Home has valuable deals on insurance for AFGE members that could save them hundreds every year? Benefits include special discounts just for being an AFGE member, and in most states, a deductible credit for claim-free driving up to $250. Call the AFGE Benefits line at 1-888-844-2343 today to see how much you could save. That's 1-888-844-2343. Underwritten by Metropolitan Group Property and Casualty Insurance Company, Warwick, Rhode Island.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Mark Steinberg, the Deputy Director of Health Policy for Families USA. Mark, welcome back to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, of course, today the Supreme Court begins hearing arguments around the Affordable Care Act, its constitutionality. What are you expecting to see out of the week?
Well, I think this is a terrific opportunity for everyone to really focus on what the law is all about. Is the Supreme Court going to get in the way of protecting people with pre-existing conditions, making sure that people can no longer be turned down by an insurance company because they are sick? Will health care coverage be affordable for people in the future? Will prescription drugs be affordable for people with Medicare? All those questions are really what the Supreme Court ultimately is going to decide, and I think it's a terrific opportunity for all of us who are interested in health care to really focus in on it.
Do you think that the justices will be looking at a particular set of issues to make their decision, to base their decision on, or will it be maybe one or two things that really turns the tide one way or the other?
As I'm sure you know, there are four questions that are being argued over the next 3 days. Today's is probably the most technical. It really is the whole challenge premature because the law doesn't take effect until 2014. Assuming we get past that, and that's probably the most difficult legal question, I think if the court follows existing precedent, they're going to uphold the law. The key question that most folks have focused on, and probably rightfully so, is the individual responsibility provision constitutional? Is it constitutional to expect that everybody has to obtain insurance if they or qualify for an exemption or pay a penalty starting in 2014? Congress has the authority to regulate economic matters under the Constitution, and if you take a look at how the Supreme Court has interpreted that in the past, in my view, it's pretty clear, and it's been agreed by several other courts have agreed with that, including conservative judges, said that this kind of regulation of the insurance market is constitutional. Even conservative judges who say they're not crazy about the law as a matter of policy, they think that's a question for the elected branches of government to figure out.
What do you think the long-term implications are here of this once the court makes its decision one way or the other?
Well, certainly in the healthcare arena, the long-term implications are crucial. If the court upholds the law, we go forward, we implement the law as it was designed, and by 2014 we'll start seeing real improvements in coverage and affordability. And also, people, I think, underappreciate the revolution that's going on in the healthcare system that is driving us to more efficient, better team approaches in healthcare. If the court goes against the law, I think it really puts the healthcare debate back in the political arena, which none of us would be too excited about, but we'll reengage there. And I think you're going to have an awkward situation. I think it's very unlikely the court will strike down the entire law, but I think it's entirely possible the court will strike down along with the individual responsibility provision if it went that way, and I think it probably won't, but let me play the alternative. If they struck down that, I think they would also quite likely strike down the protections for people with pre-existing conditions. And then you'd have a very odd political dynamic where the opponents of the law, the conservatives, have pushed very hard to get parts of the law stricken down, and what would have happened is some of the most popular, well-understood, most needed provisions, the law rules that prohibit insurance companies from denying your coverage if you're sick, are suddenly out the window, and we have to then go back to Congress and figure out another way to do it. I hope we don't get to that point. It also opens up a whole constitutional can of worms. I'm a lawyer. I'm not a constitutional lawyer. But I do wonder, if you start telling Congress what it can and can't do in the economic arena, have you really stuck the court into its court's nose into an area that it really doesn't belong, making economic policy?
Mark, as you had mentioned, you know, the possibility that this gets back into the political arena is there. But what are the implications for real working class people here?
Well, the real implications for working class people are crucial. We have waited for many, many years for comprehensive health care reform in this country, and we finally have gotten it. If you have a pre-existing condition, you're going to, by 2014, right now your children can't be denied coverage, right? And by 2014, you will not be able to be denied coverage. I think one of the less appreciated but really revolutionary notions is that if you want to change jobs starting in 2014, there's going to be a health insurance option for you. If you want to go out and become a consultant or start your own business and you're holding on to your job simply because you like health and you like the health insurance, you need the health insurance, and so many of us either are in that situation or know people who are, that's going to change. if the Supreme Court goes the wrong way, that change is not going to happen, and I think people will be in real trouble. Plus, there's a real question, what happens to parts of the law that are already in place? Are seniors going to have to start paying more for the prescription drugs at the pharmacy if the court strikes down the whole law? I don't think so. I don't think that'll happen, but who knows? I mean, the stakes are very high for real Americans.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with Mark Steinberg, the Deputy Director of Health Policy for Families USA. Mark, what has Families USA done along the way to assist in this issue?
Well, we are a national nonprofit organization dedicated to the protection and expansion of health care coverage for all Americans. So we have been working very hard both within Washington, trying to educate both people in Congress and in the administration about the importance of the reforms contained in the law. And then we also trying very hard to get the message out to the public, doing events, creating publications, creating online presences, partnering with state advocates to let folks in the states know that this law is real, it is helping people right now, and more people stand to benefit from it. Because the more people understand the benefits of the law aside from the politics of it, people tend to be very supportive of what's in the law. They don't like the process by which it was created, and none of us really like the political process, except for some very unwell people who live and die for that. But the substance of the law, when you get talking to people about, you know, if you're sick, you'll get coverage from an insurance company. They can't turn you down. You'll get a tax credit to purchase insurance, and if you can't afford it, you then don't have to pay a penalty. If you talk to people about those real benefits, insurance companies have to spend 80 cents of every dollar on health care under this law. People become much more receptive to the law.
Mark, when you're talking about those real benefits, let's just game this out for a minute and say that these provisions are taken away. This law is struck down in either partially or in its entirety. What do you think the backlash is from the American people then?
I think you're going to see a pretty significant backlash, particularly if large sections of the law are struck down. As I mentioned before, the conservatives are going to be in a very awkward position of having to explain what's their plan. Remember, the Affordable Care Act is in many ways taking a conservative idea that was proposed by the Heritage Foundation in the 90s. Bob Dole's plan in 1993 was basically not dissimilar from the Affordable Care Act. It builds on private insurance markets. The Romney bill in Massachusetts was, you know, in many ways the model for the Affordable Care Act. That's been the conservative idea for how do you help people with health conditions. They're going to have to come up with something. You hear the Republicans in the House of Representatives say we're going to repeal and replace. Well, they've never come up with a replace. They only come up with repeal. So if they strike down the law that is going to help millions and millions of Americans get the health care they need, they better come up with some meaningful alternative. And right now they haven't done that. So I think they're going to be in a real difficult position.
And then on the flip side, if the court upholds the law, where do you see the future of health care going in this country?
I think we'll be in a good position. The work isn't done. Certainly implementing the law is a tremendous challenge. It's something that the states are dealing with. Even states that have embraced the law have their hands full with getting the pieces in place so you can have your own health care marketplace, your own insurance exchange in your state, and people can buy coverage from that. But then I think we're working on improving the quality of health care, getting people to getting health care, getting doctors to work better in teams, find new ways to pay doctors that makes the system sustainable and keeps people well rather than only paying when they get sick. I think we're on a terrific, the Affordable Care Act lays the groundwork for a terrific reforms, both in making care affordable and higher quality. But it's going to be an ongoing process. Every country in the world, even ones that are further along than us, are always working on making it better. And so the work will never be done, I think.
Mark, I want to go back to something that you touched on earlier, and that was your work at Families, educating different stakeholders, Congress, the administration, as well as the general public. What are the responses that you've received from those three groups on this issue as you go to educate them about the particulars?
Well, certainly the administration is very interested in the Affordable Care Act, not surprisingly, and they're certainly receptive to ways to make it better. We have made a number of suggestions on how they can work on the regulatory process. We've certainly been doing comments. And I think the administration has done a commendable job in being receptive to the concerns of the public. There's an awful lot of questions, the Affordable Care, things that are open to be decided at the state level or later through the regulatory process. And the administration is doing a great job getting on top of getting regulations out. At the state level, I think it's varied. There are a number of states that and the public in the states that have been very receptive to making improvements, to really embracing the opportunity. I mean, this is such a historic chance to really build a healthcare system that we've never had in this country. Unfortunately, there are some states where the governors have basically made a political decision that they are going to stand in the way of expanding healthcare coverage in their states. That's very unfortunate, and we work to try to get around that message. We work with folks in those states who believe their governors are wrong, but there are some states that are going to be left behind if their governors don't get up off the dime and start implementing the law.
Do you think for those in opposition, do you think that they understand the benefits of the law, what it provides people, or not so sure?
That's a great question, and it's hard to put myself in the mind of someone who opposes it. It is unfortunate that opposition to the law has become such a political issue rather than a substantive issue. So much of what's in the Affordable Care Act was agreed upon by a bipartisan vote in Congress. I mean, so much of the healthcare system reforms, the payments to doctors to get them to work in teams, those were agreed upon in committee by Democrats and Republicans. And I think if you can get them privately off the record, folks who put the politics aside, yeah, there are a lot of good ideas in this line, and we really should get to work on implementing them. Unfortunately, right now, the political climate is such that it's very difficult for a well-meaning Republican or rubbing a conservative, to not use party labels, to say something favorable about the law without getting beaten up by their further right-wing opponents. And that's a very unfortunate situation because, as I said, a lot of the ideas here are very much agreed-upon mainstream positions that were uncontroversial outside of the context of the Affordable Care Act. Now, my hope is when we get past the election in 2012, past the Supreme Court this summer and then the election, things will quiet down and people can start really looking at the substance of the law and saying, yeah, let's take this idea, let's tweak it to make it work for our state, and really develop some good insurance markets for people so that people can get the care they need when they need it.
With regards to the elections coming up later this year, how much of an issue or a focal point do you think that the Affordable Care Act law will be?
It will be in the mix. I'm not a political prognosticator. I'm a policy guy, so it's harder for me to tell you. I think my sense is jobs and the economy are the most important issue, but the healthcare is an economic issue. I think if people understand that the Affordable Care Act is making health care more affordable for people and will continue to do so, particularly when we get to 2014, I think that certainly helps people understand what the economic stakes are. So I think it will certainly be an issue. I know that opponents of the law are going to try to make it an issue, and certainly in congressional races. I think they're going to run into some problems, though, because once you start getting to substance as opposed to the rhetoric, when you start looking at what benefits do you really want to take away from people, do you really want to put insurance companies back in control of the insurance markets, they don't have a very good answer. They talk a lot about liberty, but they don't explain where is it written that insurance companies have the freedom to push all the consumers around, where is it written that you have the freedom to pass your health care costs on to everybody else. It's really actually much more of a conservative individual responsibility idea that we should all pay our fair share. And those of us who have insurance coverage already are not affected by the mandate. Those of the 80% of Americans who have coverage for their jobs will be fine in 24. Nothing will change. We're talking about making coverage more affordable and then asking everybody to pay their fair share once it is affordable.
Mark Steinberg, the Deputy Director of Health Policy for Families USA. Mark, thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
We've been joined by Ethan Rome, the Executive Director of Healthcare for America Now. Ethan, welcome back.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Just steps away we are now from the Supreme Court as they begin to hear arguments related to the Affordable Care Act. What are you expecting to come out of this?
I think that the court's going to uphold the Affordable Care Act, and I think that we're going to be able to move forward implementing this law. This is a fight about whether or not the insurance companies are going to control our health care or whether or not we do. It's a fight about whether or not we're going to have high standards for health care, the kind of standards that labor unions like AFG have won and set the standard for. And that's what this is about. Are we going to have good quality health care or the kind of or lousy health care that doesn't give people the coverage that they need?
Ethan, tell me what you think the tipping point is going to be.
I think that if we talk about the legal issues specifically, this is a fight over whether or not Congress has the authority under the Commerce Clause to regulate economic matters. We think that they do. And when it comes to economic matters, health care is pretty big. It represents 18% of the economy. And so we believe that the Commerce Clause does give Congress that authority. The court has not used the Commerce Clause. They have not overruled a regulation or a law in 75 years. And so they're bound by precedent. In the case of Scalia and Kennedy, they've both written opinions that suggest that they would support the use of the Commerce Clause. This just makes good sense. It's a good law. It's constitutional. They need to uphold it.
Ethan, for some of our listeners out there who might not be as in touch with this situation as others, if Congress doesn't regulate commerce laws, then who would?
Fundamentally, that's the question, is whether or not Congress has the authority to forge national solutions to national problems. And that's the bottom line. This country can't operate unless Congress can make national laws that address national problems. That's why the court hasn't undercut any law or regulation in 75 years based on the Commerce Clause.
How does the Affordable Care Act, how does this law impact real people, real working class people?
The way it impacts real people is very simple. It ends insurance company abuses. Now, if you are an AFG member, then you're fortunate enough that your union has negotiated good quality benefits, so you're not getting pushed around by the insurance industry. You don't have pre-existing condition exclusions. You don't get dropped just because you get sick. But for folks without a union, for folks without a good union contract, people, millions of Americans are getting their care denied. And when it comes to unions, the biggest challenge for unions is skyrocketing costs. So this law helps to make health care more affordable. It reduces the pressure at the bargaining table.
I think you've touched on something that really resonates with people, and that is this idea that getting dropped from your insurance after you get sick. Do you think that that's something that people can really get their hands around and understand? I mean, you know, maybe someone who's a little younger and says, oh, it wouldn't happen to me, or I'm in perfectly good health. But what about maybe as you get a little bit older and you come across a healthcare issue or two, and the next thing you know, you're dropped?
Right. I mean, the insurance industry is probably the only industry in this country that's based on a very simple thing. They take your money, and then their goal is not to provide the service that they offer. That's their J-O-B, right? They're a Wall Street-run, turbocharged, profit-seeking company and industry. That's who they are. And so you sign up for health insurance, you think you're going to get it, and the moment you get sick and really need it, they use some small, arcane piece of the contract to drop you or deny. But it is true. That's the logic of their industry. Take your money and then deny you the service that you gave them the money to get. That's what this law ends. It ends insurance company abuses. It changes the way that they have to behave, and it reduces costs in the process.
How are people responding to all this? Working class people, what are they saying about it?
I think people are supportive, and it's going to take some time, and that's part of what we're doing. And by the way, right now, as we're sitting here at the United States Supreme Court waiting for these arguments, right now as the Supreme Court is considering this law, we've got the Republicans who just offered a budget before the United States Congress that eliminates Medicare as we know it, decimates Medicaid, makes huge cuts to education, and will go after federal employees. And so this is all part of an assault on working and middle-class families. And so that's why we all have to fight back. We've got to fight back because the right-wing Republicans and their corporate sponsors are going after working people everywhere, including the right of workers to bargain at all.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with Ethan Rome, the Executive Director of Healthcare for America Now. Ethan, based on how this Supreme Court decision turns out, what do you think the next steps will be for you at Healthcare for America Now?
We're going to continue to promote and defend the law, because no matter how the Supreme Court rules, I am quite certain that the Republicans and their corporate sponsors will figure out one way or another to try to go after this law. We're going to promote and defend Medicare and Medicaid. We're going to implement this law, and we are going to drive this message home between now and Election Day. Because when people go to the polls in November, they're going to have a simple choice. Do they want candidates who support the middle class, who take the side of working people, or do they want candidates who work for the super rich? So that's what we're going to do, highlight the difference between the people running for office so that working folk know who's on their side.
Ethan Rome, the Executive Director of Healthcare for America Now, thank you for the work that you do on behalf of working people.
Thank you.
Thank you to our guests this week, Congressman Jerry Connolly, Center for American Progress Action Fund President and CEO Tom Perriello, former Clinton White House senior staffer Bob Weiner, Families USA Health Policy Deputy Director Mark Steinberg, and Healthcare for America Now Executive Director Ethan Rome. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and that's The View from Inside Government.
Thank you for listening to Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife.
Did you know MetLife Auto and Home has valuable deals on insurance for AFGE members that could save them hundreds every year? Benefits include special discounts just for being an AFGE member, and in most states, a deductible credit for claim-free driving up to $250. Call the AFGE Benefits line at 1-888-844-2343 today to see how much you could save. That's 1-888-844-2343. Underwritten by Metropolitan Group Property and Casualty Insurance Company, Warwick, Rhode Island.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership, you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens, Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.